I don't even know who our guest is. So
yeah, it's going to blow you away. It's not going to blow you away who the guest is. You know who the guest is. You just don't know that this is the guest.
Okay.
There we go. All
right.
Anyways. All right. Well, sounds
cue the music.
Cue the music. Hold on, Gavin. You can't just tell me to cue the music when I'm not even ready with the music yet.
Do you wanna, you're always ready with the music.
Always. Oh, you're right. You're right. Do you want to? Now you can say it. You can say cue the music.
Cue the music.
All right.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the MLS Now podcast. I'm your host, Russell. You can find me on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. You can find the podcast on social media at MLS Now Podcast. And remember, you can find it also on the website at MLSNowPodcast.com. Joining us tonight, we have a wonderful guest. They're not here yet. We'll intro them when they're here. But in the meantime, showing up early tonight, it's our lively lion, the man who loves nothing more than to mainline the absolute madness that is MLS. You can find him on social media at LionsBlog1. It's Gavin. Gavin, hello. You were not only were you on time tonight, you were early.
Early bird gets the worm. Yep.
I was shocked when I opened the studio and I saw your face in it already. I was blown away.
Yeah, it's usually the other way around.
I think I almost fell out of my chair. Like, I might have even uttered an audible scream of shock.
Yeah. So for our listeners, if you're wondering why we are 18 minutes into live streaming and just now starting, we were waiting on a guest. So we're still waiting on said guest. Yeah. Like Russell said, there's a wonderful guest out there in the world having fun podcasting on another podcast. And then there's me, and I'm just a guest. I'm just having fun with the little blurry blurs. That's they just introduced that they need to upgrade.
Wow.
So I'm just a guest. You know, I'm not wonderful.
Here's the crazy thing, Gavin. We could either ask Riverside to upgrade this new thing that they've just introduced, or we could ask you to spend, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on a brand new recording setup with specific hardware that would allow you to run what I run in the background, which is much better at putting me over a background.
But as you can see, your camera was blurry. So
yeah, well, that's a camera hardware issue. That's not a software issue. That's me being like, hey, nothing works better than having, you know, this really nice recording setup that would let me do all this nice rendering and do all this heavy lifting and editing and create content and all this stuff, and then use like a $20 webcam. So
understandable.
Right. So, well, look, if I was going to cheap out in one place, the webcam is where I would pick. So, certainly not on microphones.
No, you can get some pretty bad mics.
I've had some bad mics.
Yep.
Yeah. So, hey, you know what? While we're still treading water here, Gavin, drink check. What you got tonight? I got the last of my killer brownie brown ale.
I got some nice clear liquid tonight.
Gavin, if you tell me that it's water, I'm going to do the only thing that I can do, and that is to harass my very tired cat that's underneath the desk.
Don't harass the cat. I could do it.
He's sitting right there. He's within reach. I wouldn't even have to go under the desk. He's like, I would have to lean over slightly, and I could obtain a cat.
It's non-alcoholic vodka.
It's a what now?
Non-alcoholic vodka. Also known as water.
See, the crazy thing is, there's actually non-alcoholic spirits out there.
Yep.
And it blows me away because I'm like, well, what's the point? Like,
who's drinking Heineken Zero? Who's doing it?
I do know several people who drink Heineken Zero and they enjoy it. So I won't besmirch Heineken Zero specifically, but
other than if you're trying to, you're addicted and you're trying to not be addicted, I get that. But if you're doing it just to, I don't know. Drinking is just to drink it. Yeah, pregnancy. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Right. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you take medication that doesn't mix with alcohol well.
You got me. You got me. You got me.
I got you. I got you. Maybe you're feeling sick and under the weather, and you, instead of being a normal person, drinking anything with, you know, high vitamin C or like a Gatorade or water, you're like, no, I've got to have a beer, but I don't want alcohol. I drink a Heineken Zero.
You didn't get me with that one. That's well, bad idea.
Look, I'm not sure if I got anyone with that one, but yeah, here we are. So, all right. Well, hey, Gavin, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to transition us. We have a brand new format here that I've come up with mere hours ago.
Drum roll, please.
The recording. Yes. Drum roll, please. Anyways, so Gavin, instead of talking about a big story within MLS, I really want to talk about a big story within soccer globally as a whole. So I'm going to give you one of two different options for us to talk about, and we can save some of these and we can cycle through them over time. Or if you feel so inclined, we can talk about both. But two pieces of news that I considered interesting today. First off, English Premier League voted provisionally to approve a spending cap based on the lowest revenue earning team in the Premier League, and it's 5 times their commercial / broadcast income, and that's now the new cap for spending. And I believe there's some infographics that went out, and it shows that only Chelsea would actually be affected by this cap because everyone else spends less than like the $500 million per year that is otherwise allowed. So, but nominally, it's a cap on spending. That's topic A. Topic B, I don't know if you saw, this will come into effect in Leagues Cup, no less. Some beloved celebrities, Ryan and Rob, now have an interest in a Liga MX team, Necaxa. They have bought in, and
they bought it already, or they're interested?
They bought an interest in the club. They're not the sole ownership, but they have a like partial ownership position based on what I've seen in the news, which I think really takes us back to, you know, pop culture, celebrity involvement in clubs and how good or bad that is for building A, brand identity, or B, interest beyond just the ball and the players on the field. Again, for better or worse. So I'll let you take your pick. Do you feel more strongly one way or the other on either of these stories?
I like them both. Let's start with option A, and we'll come back to Robin. Who?
Robin Ryan?
Ryan, that's right.
That's right. We'll come back to them. If you can't tell, Gavin does not watch Welcome to Wrexham.
Which, not a lick.
If you are watching this live and potentially listening to this on the day it releases, season 3, episode 1 comes out this week. I believe May 2nd it premieres. So
there you go. Ooh, so Gavin, amazing.
Gavin is sarcastically excited. I'm actually excited. I enjoy the show. It's a good show.
Fair. Yeah, okay, fair. I won't yuck your yum.
It's a lot of people's yum, Gavin.
I don't think we do this a lot, but we never really call out the episode title. Last week we did Expect the Expected because a lot of the results seem to go as expected.
Right.
This week we called it, what did it end up being called?
I believe you texted me.
Yeah, I did. Weekend. It's in the thumbnail, but I can't see the thumbnail.
It was something along the lines of this dumb league makes no sense.
Yeah, this dumb league makes zero sense. That's what it is. So that's your title this week. I think it fits because this league does not fit.
It makes zero. The league doesn't fit, but the league doesn't make sense either. So anyways. Okay. All right. Well, hey, let's talk about something that apparently does make sense to the rest of the world, which is capping expenditures within the sport. MLS already does this. We have the salary cap. We got GAM. We got TAM. We have homegrown subsidies. You have draft picks. You have free agency and designated players. Like, we have all these roster mechanisms that we use to sort of sometimes spend money, but largely we try and cap out how much teams can really spend across the board. And It seems like other places are starting to cap that out. Now, what's going on with the Premier League, it's interesting because unlike financial fair play, which caps based off of a percentage of each club's turnover, this is based on one specific club, in this case, the lowest earning club within the Premier League for any given year, and it's five times their commercial and broadcast revenue, which for the Premier League, very rich league, still tons of money. And as we said earlier, it does not appear that it's going to affect many clubs at all, potentially just Chelsea, who didn't even vote against this proposal. They abstained. Fun fact.
Of course they did.
So, yeah, I think what comes across to me on this, and you can feel free to pick this apart, or if you're listening to this and you disagree and you want to say, Russell, you have no idea about English football either, feel free to, hit me up on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. But to me, this almost seems like an effort that might be geared towards just capping off transfer fees. Like, that's where huge expenditures are going every year. And honestly, it seems like you don't see a whole lot of moves for other teams in Europe until these English teams move and they flood the market with money. Huge, enormous amounts of money. You know, they'll go out and it's like, what, Declan Rice was $100 million to another club. Well, and then now, West Ham goes and they're like, well, now we've got all this money. We can go spend it.
And they go to Ajax or wherever he was and go get Mohamed Kudus.
Yeah. And, that money continues to flow out. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be within the Premier League, right? Like, look at Mudryk, brought from Shakhtar Donetsk in the Ukrainian League. I think he was also $100 million. And, granted, that's a different, a little bit different, shadier circumstances that went on there. But point being, these are huge, enormous, outlandish transfer fees that are flooding the market with money. And then it's driving up the prices of all these other players. Rightly so, because they see how much these clubs can spend and they're thinking, I want a piece of that as well. I'm contributing to the club. But I think eventually it does start to really push the game down for anyone who isn't, if you're not a have, if you're a have not, the have nots really start to lose out on basically everyone, because if you don't have the money, you're not getting the players. Just full stop.
Yeah, so I saw an interesting take on this earlier today, and the person was saying that the spending cap isn't necessarily there to really stop the transfers. It's more... Oh, hey, Joe. It is not there to stop the transfers. It's more there to stop another superpower coming into the league and buying, buying Everton. Let's say a big investor comes in, buys Everton, historic club. Have Everton ever been relegated? I don't think so.
Not yet.
And yeah, it's getting close. And, really invest in them, really get them players, and in one transfer window, spend £900 million and get them to the top immediately. I think that's interesting that they're just trying to stop that kind of nation state, buy the club, build the club in 2-3 seasons, kind of like what ended up happening with Manchester City, what happened a long time ago with Chelsea, what's currently happening with Newcastle. That was the thoughts on why the cap was put in. Because like you said, everyone but the dumbest run club in the world right now in Chelsea met the they were within the guardrails set up by this new rule.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Gavin, as you kind of spoiled it, I'm going to take us back to our wonderful special guest who is joining us right now as I can finally use what I wrote to introduce them here. Joining us, of course, the wayfarer of the world's boroughs, the man spitting spice, singing us a ballad of the boys in Hudson Blues. You can find him on social media at Coach Joe. It's Coach Joe. Hello, Coach Joe.
How's it going, guys?
Hello. Happy to have you on.
Thank you.
We're glad you could we could peel you away from your other commitments to be with us here. Now, I do have to warn you, we do plan to record for approximately 3.5 days straight. So, you know, definitely very thankful that you've managed to carve out just vast swaths of your entire life to be here on the show with us. So I really appreciate that commitment.
I can talk MLS all day, every day. Let's do it.
Well, that's good because, I mean, certainly I know you don't have any responsibilities like a child to take care of or a job or anything like that.
That kid's sleeping. He's fine.
Never.
Well, hey, so we were, when you joined in here, just talking about some of the news that came out on the Premier League clubs voting on a spending cap based on their broadcast commercial revenue. Just talking about, you know, impact it might have short term, maybe even long term, my position on it. You know, it's going to stifle transfer fees, which, depending on how it's implemented, it could be good for the game. It might help stop so much talent all piling up at just one specific club. Gavin, I don't want to summarize for you too much because it sounds like you were summarizing a summary of other things. But Joe, any instant reactions on that? Thoughts before we hit another piece of news here that I think you'll care a lot more about?
I mean, I think that news, when did that news break? That news broke this afternoon about the Premier League. So, I mean, I didn't get a chance to deep dive and really read the article, but I mean, you guys can give me the rundown. Are they pretty much, are they trying to add a salary cap to the Premier League and kind of be like MLS?
If by salary cap you mean setting an arbitrary amount so high that only one team would ever be impacted by it, yes, correct, a salary cap.
So, the Premier League trying to be like the MLS, be like MLS is perfect in my book because then they can that people can stop crapping on our league and saying that we do everything wrong.
Yeah, it's more a spend transfer fee spending cap than a salary cap.
Well, I mean, I think that's good too because I mean, the Premier League they throw around silly money in that league for people. Like they just spend every team in the Premier League at the top of the table is like the Yankees. Like they're just spending to spend.
And that's because the teams that, you know, are selling their players, they know they have that money and they're willing to do it. And so, like, hey, we have one of the best players around. You're going to have to give us all your money, essentially.
Right. Well, and so, what they think is all their money. And then they're like, oh, dang, you got all of our money. Anyways, hey, other team, do you also want $100 million for this player that we said we didn't have?
It's absurd.
Yeah. So, anyways, just one piece of interesting news there. I'm very curious as to how it's going to pan out long term. I definitely think it's going to have a ripple effect on transfer fees. That's just my gut instinct is when you can't go out and willy-nilly spend $100 million all the time on your players, either more players are going to spread out outside of the Premier League or maybe just everyone goes to La Liga to either Real Madrid or Barcelona. Maybe not Barcelona because they're broke right now, but...
You know what I like about it, though, is it's very simple. There's a cap. Don't go over it. And sometimes I just wish that's what we had here in MLS. None of these, DPs under 22, DPs and under 22 also interact. You can have these different scenarios. You can do trades and draft and you have this many slots and you have this many slots and then you have the supplemental slots and then you have like the supplemental like all of the just random stuff. Some I feel like it'd be better to just give MLS teams a cap, let them do whatever they want with it.
Here's the crazy thing, Gavin. By my math, the average team should receive broadcast revenue in MLS of like $8 point something million, like 8.2, 8.3 a year. Okay. If you, based on the Premier League, their standard is 5 times the amount of the lowest earning team's broadcast / commercial revenue. And that comes to like $500 something million is what that cap is supposed to be. In MLS, if you were to apply the same thing, we would be capped out at like $43 million. Which would actually, honestly, not be that bad for like
I don't think anybody would be breaking that.
Maybe like two teams, like Toronto and maybe Miami, and that's probably it.
Well, the problem is that all transfers that happen in MLS, it's all with funny money. It's not, I feel like it's not real money. It's Garber bucks. Because if you sell someone for $12 million, you only get to use like what, $2 million of that towards more purchases.
So like, they just changed it.
The money doesn't matter.
They just changed it to
what
three.
What you sell someone for doesn't matter. What's it going to do? It's going to help you build facilities and build another. If you're the Crew, build another stadium because your other one is going to fall apart. So like what? I mean, MLS becoming a selling league. What good is it? Because we can't use the money that we sell people for anything other than stuff inside the club.
They just changed it recently for this summer. Sales now. I think GAM is max. GAM that you can convert it to GAM is now maxed out at 3 million, which is actually a huge change if you think about it. Because GAM is used for a lot of different reasons because it's the funny money of the league, like you said.
Is GAM dead now?
I think it's going to. It's definitely going that direction, but
I think by the end of the current CBA, it is supposed to be phased out.
Yeah.
RIP Tam.
Yeah. Well, hey, you still got quite a number of years that you can enjoy it. So, all right. Well, hey, you know what? I have one other topic here, really high level quick so that we can then jump into some games here. Robin Ryan of Wrexham Ownership, they bought a stake in Necaxa in Liga MX. Guys, celebrity owners for teams, good, bad, indifferent, where do you stand?
Good.
Okay.
Just the brand, you know, cross-pollination between sports, and I don't know if Kevin, didn't KD invest in a team? I don't know.
Maybe.
Somebody like that invested in a team, and it's like, oh, hey, there's a soccer team. They exist. And my favorite player invests in them, so maybe I'll check them out one time. I don't know. It's decent, I guess. Maybe not good. Decent.
I think that's the same thing that's going on with like Patrick Mahomes and SKC, though. So, and how many people know Patrick Mahomes is invested in SKC and follow SKC because of him? So, in case you can't tell, I fall on the indifferent side. I think ultimately it's not about celebrity owners. I think it's just how well, you know, either the celebrity owners or whoever is producing content is telling the story and selling the personality to people. It doesn't matter who the personality is.
Yeah, I mean, I think celebrity owners are a good thing in the league, especially if they're polarizing and going to help bring awareness to the league and maybe bring in some fans that maybe wouldn't have found this league otherwise, but maybe just started following the league or the club because of the standing of the owner. Do I like that they decided to pick a Mexican team to buy? No. I mean, I would have rather them jump on an MLS team. I don't want to see the Mexican league succeed or do anything good. that's just how I feel. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of a situation where having a well-to-do celebrity throwing cash at a soccer club is going to be a bad thing. If they have tight pockets and don't spend, then that's a problem. But if they're willing to spend the money that they've accrued over their lifetime, that's always a good thing, right?
Well, hey, in that case, they really should get in on MLS because there's absolutely some cheap owners in MLS, and they're not going anywhere. So.
Kevin Durant invested in Philadelphia.
Yeah. That seems on.
Or sorry, he's a 5% owner. My bad, not invested.
I thought that was weird when that came out because I mean, you like the other owners that bought clubs. They bought clubs in areas that make sense. Will Ferrell is an actor. LAFC. Drew Carey, I believe, is a Seattle native. Is he or is he Cleveland native? I remember watching Drew Carey in that show back in the day, the Drew Carey show that was on TV. Where he was like an Indian.
I thought you were going to say whose line is it?
No, I'm older than that. When he was on TV, he had this show where he was like a diehard Indians fan. Cleveland rocks. You have to go watch it on YouTube. But I mean, Drew Carey has been a good owner for the past 10 plus. How long has Drew Carey been an owner? It's a while in Seattle, right?
Yeah, been a while.
I mean, but Kevin Durant owning a stake in Philadelphia didn't make much sense to me. I don't think he's from Philadelphia. I don't think he played for Philadelphia. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I mean, he's been pretty quiet. It's not, he hasn't done a whole lot. Like, he'll show up to a game, I think, every now and again, and wear like a Union jersey or something. But I don't think he's like a very prominent, active owner for Philadelphia.
Yeah, same thing with James Harden in Houston. Like, just no, makes sense.
I saw him at the U.S. Open Cup. He was throwing up the H's for Houston U.S. Open Cup. Yeah. Then again, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, when Messi was playing in SKC, they followed him around and they showed Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Messi dapping each other up. And
now, did either of you feel any type of way when J.J. Watt opted to become an owner of an English Premier League team instead of buying an MLS franchise?
No, because it feels like everyone buys teams in England right now.
I know, but like someone who's wealthy in the States, like, we have a league here. It kind of, like, I was like, why wouldn't you just buy a team here in the States? You're American. You made your money here. You played for a long, long time in Houston with the Texans. Like, it would have made more sense for him to become an owner with one of the Texas teams. I'm not sure where he grew up originally. If he has a team that, like, maybe is from where he grew up. I was like, why are you buying? What was it? Is it Burnley or it's Burnley, isn't it? That he's a part owner of, or is it Aston Villa?
I got enough on it.
JJ Watt.
JJ Watt.
Oh, Adam's gonna know this. I think it's Burnley. I think you're right. I think it's Burnley. Let me look.
Gavin's good at miscellaneous EPL trivia.
Yes, it's Burnley. Yep.
There you go.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I could see, why not just invest in the United States? Yeah. But, like,
it's expensive, Gavin and Joe.
The Premier League is just a cash cow. It's the NFL of soccer. Like, you're making money. Like, even if you get relegated, you're making money.
Yeah, but also, I guarantee when he bought Burnley, he's not like a majority owner, or not 100% owner. He like has, like, probably like 20%, 50%. Like,
yeah,
but for the amount of money that he spent on Burnley to get 20%, what percentage does that buy him in an MLS team when your, you know, franchise fee is $500 million?
Yep. Good point, Russell. Good point.
And I guess
I'm all about the value for money.
Well, we also have Matthew McConaughey in Austin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is definitely a growing number of celebrities and well-to-do famous people that are investing in MLS.
Yeah, like I said, I'm all for it as long as they're telling a story and, like, making content and leveraging it to become engaging and interesting. If they're just, like, buying in to get, like, you know, wealth appreciation, it's like, whatever. I don't care. It's no different than all other ownership out there. So,
yep.
All right, guys, I have three topics that I'm going to describe some matches with or change up the format a little bit. So I've grouped these matches into three descriptors. The first descriptor is thrills. The second descriptor is chills. And the third descriptor is sleeping pills. I've got some matches that I believe can be adequately described under each one of these. I'm going to let Joe, as our special guest, pick which of these categories we hit first.
It was thrills, chills, and...
Thrills and sleeping pills.
Let's get the boring ones out of the way first. Let's go sleeping pills.
Oh, okay.
I like the way you think.
All right. So I've got four matchups in sleeping pills, and I've defined this one. These are matches where either one or both teams are lacking momentum, or they just couldn't be bothered on the night, or you could have just tuned out and you could have missed this match. And, you know, any of those might apply to these. So we've got Chicago versus Atlanta was the first one that I had lumped in here. Chicago at home, essentially wasting time in the closing minutes, going for a draw against Atlanta. It's like, what's gone wrong in Chicago? Like, I wish we had Tim here to tell us why this is at this point beyond just coaching. Like
technically, we do have Tim here, just in words.
Yeah, but I want Tim's passion. I want his exasperation and just disappointment to be like, I'm a Chicago fan and I need help. So, but yeah, I initial hot take on this one. Atlanta, for me, are back in that weird point where I don't think they have any idea how they're going to play week over week. Sometimes they play great, and sometimes they show up and they score zero goals against the Chicago side that I don't know if, like, they have what? They have one win, two wins this season, and how many clean sheets, if any? Like, zero goals in Chicago against this Chicago team is unacceptable. And
I agree with that.
It's not like Atlanta have been a bad team. I mean, they've played good teams. They come out on top. I don't think there's any consistency in this side again. And it was that way last season and we're back to it. And I think I'm ready to be back on the, you know, Pineda out train. Cause like, I don't know what else is explaining it at this point. They have the talent. They should be a much more consistent team.
I watched the I watched the wrap-up show. Did Giacomakis play in this game?
He started. I'm almost positive he started.
I mean, it kind of feels like...
For me, that's what I was looking to say, like, oh, maybe that's why they were struggling. But he started and... They should have scored.
Well, it kind of looks like Atlanta in their current form. I mean, it looks like they're going to be successful if their high profile players are producing, but if they have an off match and aren't kind of putting the team on their back, they're going to struggle to get results. Giacomakis and Thiago Almada obviously are polarizing players. Giacomakis is definitely in the top 10 for Golden Boot lead right now so far this season when he's healthy and playing. And Almada has been a little bit disappointing for me this year. Last year, coming off of the World Cup hype, the hype was you have to go watch Atlanta play when they come to your city because you get to watch a World Cup champion play. And he was putting on a little bit of a show, but this year so far it's been a little bit of a dud. So a little bit disappointed in what he's done. And then they have another guy, Loba or something, in Atlanta. He's kind of their third headed of the three headed monster.
Lobjanidze.
Something like that. I forget what he had. Saba. On the back of his shirt. On the back of his shirt, it's abbreviated. It's like Loba or something like that.
Saba. Yep. He hasn't shown up either. You're right. He's been hot and cold.
And then Chicago. I mean, I feel bad for anybody who's paying to go watch that team. That they shouldn't be as bad as they are. MLS journeyman Kellen Acosta is there. He hasn't done anything notable since he scored the win goal in the first couple games of the season. Shaqiri is trending downwards. He's probably coming to the close of his career. He's not someone that they can lean on to kind of carry them. So they're kind of stuck in a holding pattern where do you fire Frank Klopas or do you keep him and just kind of ride out whatever is going to happen the rest of 24? I'm not really sure what to expect from Chicago at this point. I know we joke around in the group chat like we're gonna bet against them, and then the minute that they get a result, we're mad because we betted against them.
Yeah, yep. This is the week. I'm not betting on any match involving Chicago this week.
Don't touch it. They can't afford to keep throwing away seasons when it comes to managers. Like, if they were to fire Klopas, it's almost like another season just tossed in the bin, unless they have a replacement lined up very quickly. But it doesn't seem that way.
But what about firing Klopas? Says anything different is going to happen when they fired Hendrickson?
Nothing. And, yeah, that's a good point.
Like, nothing about their decision-making process in Chicago tells me that they are going to identify a manager that is going to improve or whatever upper decision-making process is in place. Because, I mean, if you're three coaches and all three of them have basically crashed, when is it not the coaching issue? There's a different issue.
So I think Chicago needs, like, some type of feel-good story to kind of, like, get them back into relevance. I don't know if he has the coaching certifications, the proper ones, but I think they need to find a way to bring Mike McGee back into the fold. He's one of the more famous players who played there for a while. I think they need to find a way to bring him back in the fold and have at least some positive PR, something to kind of reignite Chicago, because they're an MLS original. We can't have these teams kind of just toiling away and not doing much of anything. Like, Chicago should be a good team. They're a major market in MLS. I would consider them. They can't just be this bad.
Historically, they've been good too. It's just recently this ownership has been dreadful. Yeah. So
they gotta get
we've got two correspondence corners. I will just call out as well, like, to be fair to Chicago, to be fair to Atlanta, Chris Brady, the Chicago goalkeeper, had a really good game. He made a couple of big saves. Yeah. So we'll give some credit. Bryce, our Atlanta correspondent, he had a one-word correspondent corner, and it was just, bruh. I think that summed up Atlanta really well, because, like, you're going in that game thinking, okay, we're going to win this one, like, we're better than them. And yet, here they are, they find themselves dropping 2 points. And then for Chicago, Tim's got a long one. He said, first the good, the Fire got a point, and Chris Brady stood on his head to earn a clean sheet against Atlanta's high-octane offense on the night. That former Fire goalkeeper legend and current goalkeeper coach, Zach Thornton, was inducted into the Ring of Fire, the team's Hall of Fame. Well, that's cool. Zooming out, though, Ezra Hendrickson was fired 10 games into 2023. The team had 11 points, 13 goals for, 16 goals against. 10 games into 2024, the team has 10 points, one less, having scored 11 goals, two less, and conceded 18, two more, despite the addition of club record signing Hugo Kuipers alongside Kellen Acosta and a revamped back line. Team hasn't scored in 282 minutes on the pitch and has just one goal from open play in the last five games. And yet, Klopa's seat doesn't feel hot. Everyone in Chicago has seen this show too many times to blame the manager.
I mean, there's nothing more to say.
That. How many Chicago minutes scoreless?
282. Oh,
God.
That's insane. So,
I can empathize with that from previous years for FCC, and it sucks.
Is CJ Sapong a free agent? Is he available?
He might have retired. I don't know. All right. Shall we move on?
Yeah,
we got a lot of games.
Hey, this is going to be a quick one. Columbus versus Montreal. It's a 0-0 draw. Gavin, you and I said this could go to be a draw going into the weekend because Columbus has a much more important match to play on Wednesday. I don't personally think that there's anything to be worried about because I don't think they're worried about MLS right now. I think all their attention is on CONCACAF Champions Cup. I know you were pulling up their recent form, the last six matches, there's no wins in there. I don't think it's something they're even looking at right now.
They had a bit of a lull in Champions Cup. I think 2 weeks went by between quarterfinals and semifinals. Obviously, the last two games have been impacted by the Champions Cup, but six games without a win? Six games?
How many of those are losses and how many of those are draws?
It's five draws in a row. It's a loss at Charlotte and then five draws in a row. And I get there's going to be rotation from Champions Cup, but in between, I would have expected them to get at least a win. And that's what's got me feeling a little iffy on them right now.
Well, this last game, that's all. I'll ask you two questions. Did Cucho start?
They're in the middle of there. No.
Okay, then I don't believe so. They weren't expecting to win this game.
Right, yeah. They definitely rotated big time, as they should have. That was the correct decision.
So. Did Nagby start?
No.
Let me look at their lineup. I don't remember if Nagby started.
All this to say, Joe, no. I think you and I agree.
No Nagby, no Rossi, no Cucho. They weren't trying to win this game.
Yeah, the only like out-and-out starter was like Aiden Morris, Zawadzki, and like the goalkeeper.
Yeah, no. This was rotation. They didn't care about this game. They're focused on CONCA champions. Yeah. Trademark Andrew Wiebe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I think we had a correspondence corner on Columbus.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who's Columbus again? Is that Devin? That's Devin, right?
Yeah, it's Devin.
Okay. He said they drew.
He sums it up about as well as any of us can.
Yeah, they drew again, but a much bigger game is on tap for Wednesday. And that's it.
That's all there is to it.
I will say, on the fact that Columbus rotated, if I'm a Montreal fan, I'm pretty frustrated that we didn't get the win. Like, like you said, Russell, their main focus is on Champions Cup. Like, Columbus kind of had the better chances in this game overall. I mean, Montreal obviously had a couple later on in the game, but Columbus could have had a goal or two, and Montreal looked the worst team against a heavily rotated Columbus. I'm frustrated if I'm seeing that as a Montreal fan.
Columbus rotated is still a competent team. I'm not convinced that Montreal is fully ready to be a competent team. They're going to have moments that they look good, but they have a long way to go still. I'm not reading too much into this match.
Did Borat play for Montreal? And by Borat, I mean that the Sacha Baron Cohen, the guy with the mustache, Kokoro?
No.
He didn't play?
He was out this week.
He didn't play? That's why Montreal didn't win, because he's like their own. I think he's the only player that it's worth their weight in gold. He's the only one that can score goals for that team.
That's what I'm thinking for them right now, is they're a team of like good, solid teammates, but they don't have those individuals who can bring them to the next level right now.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to move us on, though, because I don't want to spend tons of time talking about these matches, admittedly. And I'm going to throw another not great one your way. Hey, Nashville versus San Jose. I feel like I would rather watch paint dry than watch either Nashville or San Jose play this year. Just full stop. And I apologize to Nashville fans and San Jose fans that are listening to that. Like, both these coaches need to go. Nashville fans on social media are seemingly fully on the Gary out train. I don't know if I've seen any Luchi Gonzalez out steam from San Jose, but he's got to go. Like, just these teams need resets. Full stop. That's it. No.
Well, I mean, I went back. I watched the wrap up. The San Jose defense actively ran away from Hany Mukhtar as he shot the ball from 30-ish yards outside the box, like from net, and placed the ball far post side netting. Like, he won an MVP in this league. Like, how are you running away from him? And like, I think he took a shot and it got deflected, and then he got the ball back and then shot it again. Like, what are you doing? Like, I feel like play the Taylor Twellman. What are we doing? What are we doing? Like, well, San Jose, what are you precisely doing?
Yeah. On the topic of Mukhtar, I mean, it feels like forever since we've even talked about him, Russell. Like, that's definitely a big part of Nashville just totally hitting the gutter, is Mukhtar's absences from injury and just not being available. And then just when he's on the pitch, not really, you know, being absent as well while playing.
I think he's frustrated. Like, the fact that he's taking two shots from 30 yards out tells me that he does not think that there is any better opportunity on the field,
right,
with 10 other guys on his side. Like, that sucks.
Didn't they splash? Was it Surridge that they splashed for the striker? And he's been playing for them, right? But he's just not doing well?
He's been half decent, but he's not... He's more of a service guy.
If you look at Nashville's roster, like the only other player that that instills a little bit of fear in me, and he really shouldn't, but it's the Schaffelberg. He's the only other person that can provide like moments of brilliance other than Hany on that team.
Yep.
At the moment, They have a bunch of Red Bull castoffs over there, and they're getting older. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think that their roster construction is in a place where they're going to be able to contend.
And they've gotten rid of 4 or 5 international slots, like for this season. Like they're going
bare bones,
all American, all available to play in MLS, have their green card. It's very odd. It's a very odd strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems like they're just mailing it in this season, and they'll, I guess, reassess going into 2025.
They must. It's just crazy.
Fans.
The only notes I have on this as well is, like, Nashville's identity is their defense usually, but they're 1-0 up against pretty much the worst team in the league, and the San Jose goal is them. Is their line being insanely high for no reason? Like, they're all the way up, pretty close to the halfway line, maybe like 10 yards back from it. And San Jose have the ball, like, right there. And so they've stepped up for really no reason. San Jose get in behind and score. And it's just like, yeah, that's the mark of a bad team. Like, what is that coaching? What is that instruction there? Why are you that high for no reason when you're 1-0 up at home?
Is Walker's like, moving back yet?
I don't think so.
That's a big miss for them in the defense.
Yeah, but still,
they have like just 9 center backs.
Nashville has talent. I mean, Shaq Moore at fullback, Walker Zimmerman at center back. Is Romney there? Did Romney go there from New England?
I don't think so.
No, Romney left Nashville to go to New England. I'm pretty sure, right? Yeah.
Shaq Moore, when he's healthy, these mm-hmm. are U.S. men's national team guys. I mean, in theory, they should be pretty stout defensively. But if Walker's out, then that throws a wrench in everything.
Yeah. Look, the names on paper look pretty decent, right? When all are fit, they look like they have a decent squad. But it's just like it just doesn't work for whatever reason.
And then on the flip side, San Jose. I mean, you have Espinoza. And you have Jeremy Obobese, who, I mean, I would take Jeremy Obobese on NYCFC right now because our strikers aren't worth a damn. I don't understand how San Jose could be this bad. Like, they're just so, so bad.
I have no notes on them. Just hands up.
Isn't Jackson Yule, too? Like, another young American player. Not young anymore, but American player?
Yep.
I mean,
and Guerrero used to play for Dallas.
I guess, I mean, it's 10 games, and they're still like, I guess you can. Clubs are forming their identity for the season, but like, I would say over the next 10 games, if it doesn't change at all, then you're kind of like, the season's over.
Yeah, that's a good summary. And San Jose have 4 points this season. Same
their season's England. Over. I just straight.
Hey, that's what we said about SKC last season. It's not over.
You know what? If Luchi Gonzalez turns it around, he can keep his job.
Yes, I agree with that. It's not going to happen.
And the West is pretty weak, I think, right now. So crazier things could happen.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
If the West is weak and San Jose is on 4 points, I think that should tell you all you need to know.
Yeah. Also a good point.
Yeah. All right, look, this conversation has put my cat to sleep, and I'm worried it's going to put the listeners to sleep, so I'm going to move us on to our last of our sleeping pill matches, Dallas versus Houston. Guys, I just want to throw some notes on this match your way, and I think this will tell you all you need to know. Houston has Griffin Dorsey sent off in the 5th minute. There was 50 minutes between that sending off and when Dallas scored. And just to give you an idea of what this match looked like from a threat standpoint, there's a stat called shot creating actions, which I'm going to talk about more later, but Houston had 3 in 90 minutes and Dallas had 47.
So what I put in my notes, Russell, I'm glad you called all that out. What I put in my notes is you can visualize how this match played out. Like, without even watching the game, 2-0 Dallas over Houston, red card in the 5th minute. I know exactly how the game played out, and I didn't even have to watch it. And so the fact you read those stats that I didn't even know, it's like, that tracks. That tracks. Just 2-0. Dallas were trying to pick the lock. They were controlling the possession. They were the ones attacking. Houston's just sitting deep, not really being able to do much since they're down to 10 men. Just, ugh, what a boring match to watch.
That's it. That's my summary. 47 shot creating actions versus 3.
I mean, well, I think if I'm not mistaken, Aceh is still out with injury, right?
No, he's easing back in.
But he's not at
on the bench. Peak.
I mean, Aceh's old, so like he's taking time to recover.
He's not 100%. But
also, Jesus Ferreira also out with injury right now.
Jesus Ferreira. Yeah, he's been out for a while. Yeah.
So I mean, like, like each club's stud player is not either not playing at all or working their way back from injury. So I mean, I think that's a large contributor to their poor form. But I mean, Dallas is a team that has isn't Ariola there? Legette's there, right? So they should.
Yeah. They've been struggling with injuries. They should though. Be like, big like,
with those
time.
Guys. They should be better than this. Like.
They should be, but like they're not fit. I mean, these are guys that Velasco's barely played. Ferreira
meaningful minutes for the U.S. men's national team.
Yep. It's just been a struggle for them.
And Houston, I mean, outside of Aceh, I mean, I keep picking their one like winger for fantasy because Coco? He's a high value. He's high value, low cost, high production. What's his name? Ibra. On Houston,
I thought you were going to say Coco Karaskia because that's who I would.
No, it's like Ibrahim
Aliyu
or something like that, right?
Aliyu.
Yeah. So he, yep. I mean, he's a pacey winger, and he's been bagging some goals for them so far this year. But I mean, who's their nine? Like, who's their guy? In Houston, NYCFC traded Gabe Siegel over there. He was like our third string striker / NYCFC 2 player. We traded him to Houston and he was getting some burn there a little bit, but who's their nine?
They bought this guy last year. I think he's injured right now, but he hasn't really worked out for them. And I mean, he's a supplemental roster slot guy for Houston, who started at 9 this weekend.
So it sounds like Dallas is going through a big injury bug, and Houston is just their identity list with no true 9 to carry them.
Yeah, they lost Corey Baird.
I mean, is losing Corey Baird really – like, that shouldn't be the end of the world.
Yeah. Ferreira. That's their striker.
Oh, Sebastian
Ferreira.
Ferreira.
Sebastian Ferreira, yep. Yeah.
But he's not doing good for them. I think he's got like 3 or 4 goals for them.
Shout out to my boy, my guy, Sebastian Biaga for scoring that nice header in that game. Dallas.
Hell yeah. Okay, last thing I'll say is just Houston are really struggling right now. 2 losses in a row against 2 Texas teams in rivalry matches. That has to hurt. So thinking about you, Houston fans, thinking about you.
I'm trying not to think about Houston at all, if I'm being honest.
Houston, for me, Houston is like Chicago to you. They're my Chicago. I just got to stop.
You got to stop betting on Houston.
Yep.
Let's make a pact right here and now. I won't bet on Chicago this weekend. You don't bet on Houston.
Deal.
All right. Gavin, as the co-host who arrived early, I'll let you take us to our next category, either thrills or chills.
Thrills. Let's other extreme.
Other extreme. All right. I got 5 matchups in the thrills. We're going to start it off with some football heritage. Cue the Jose Mourinho.jpg LAFC versus Portland. This had an own goal. It had a red card. Had a 90+2 stoppage time winner. And here's a really fun stat for you. In the 4 goals that were not an own goal, there were 5 goals in this match, 4 of them were actual shots, Do you want to guess what the grand total of XG associated across all four of these shots was?
All four shots.
I'm trying to think of the goals. Let's say four goals, 1.2.
1.2, that's a good guess, Coach Joe. 2.3. According to Price is Right, you're both wrong.
0.16. 0.16?
0.16. 0.16 XG was associated with these four goals.
What? How do you figure that?
Part of the stats. I used some stats from Stats Bomb. 0.16 XG. Mm-hmm.
I thought the only two places you can find stats are Fop Mob and Who Scored.
No, there's other places. A lot of places use Stats Bomb as their database to pull from.
I guess, Tillman and Bowongo were gotta be very low.
Those are 30 yard shots. They're all very long shots.
Tillman wasn't that long.
Oh, yeah, Moreno.
Tillman was at the top of the 18.
Okay, and then Rodriguez, what was his again? I can't remember it. Oh, his was at the top of the box too. Okay. Okay.
Now I will note all of these had an okay post shot XG, which is the XG associated once the ball's actually made it to the net. But this is based on player position, what's in front of them, where they are, the type of shot they're taking. So basically when their foot makes contact with the ball, what's the XG you would associate with that opportunity? And post-shot XG is once the ball is actually towards the goal, what's the odds that shot itself would score? But from a position and circumstance standpoint, 0.16.
That's pretty crazy. From the game itself, LAFC had a pretty strong first half, but for me, Portland were on their way to winning this match until the red card. The two goals were clinical, got them right back in it 2-2. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, they're about to do the comeback away from home. And then Chara had to get the red card. Just really stupid from him. No reason to get it in that situation at the halfway line even. Okay, I get it if you're, stopping a counterattack to get to goal and you're trying to stop the goal. I get it. But just a really dumb moment from Diogo Chara.
As much as it may have been a dumb moment from Chara, but I do agree with you that it was an unnecessary and challenge. But I do think it was savvy veteran game play from the attacker who got fouled. Because after he got past Chara, he made his run diagonally into Chara's path, which then made it look amplified as to the amount of contact and him going down. So it was definitely savvy gamesmanship going on there, but it was definitely, the challenge was unnecessary. It wasn't like a dangerous, all out counterattack going on. He did not need to make that challenge in that moment. I would even speculate that maybe he may have even forgotten that he was on a yellow previously.
Could be,
but
it did look that bad. Yeah. Even though the first yellow came 4 minutes previous. That Bowongo winner.
After a slow start, Bowongo's really found the flair for the dramatic as of the past few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Bowongo as well who, one of his goal celebrations was going to the phone and taking a video on the field from either someone's phone or maybe a media or press person's phone. But it's just, look, I love seeing fun celebrations. I still think the Jovlich celebration where he jumps into the stands and chugs a fan's beer is still an all-timer for me. But,
oh yeah,
we love a good celebration.
So, after him winning the Golden Boot last year, and I obviously had the slow start, but now he's picking it up. Does Bowongo feel inevitable at this point? Is he gotten to the point where, not questioning is he going to score today, but more when is he going to score today?
Getting there. I don't know if he's at Carlos Vela level yet, because Vela in his Golden Boot insane year was averaging more than one goal per 90. I think he was 1.05 goals per 90. I don't know if Bowongo hits that, but I would be willing to say he scores more often than like 0.5 per 90. Like, if that makes sense.
I mean, for this game specifically, after the first 5 minutes of the match, I was like, oh, Bwonga's scoring today. Like, he was just on it. You could see he was clocked in, ready to go. But I think it is kind of like some games, he's all right. And then some games you can see, oh, he's on it. He's going to get a goal today.
Well, I mean,
but so he's like almost there.
I think the own goal, that was it Kamal Miller's own goal?
Yeah.
Yep.
That was Bwonga. Like, Bwonga made that play happen. He drove past the defender, slotted that ball across. If mm-hmm. Kamal Miller doesn't hit it in, the guy, the right winger is going to tap that ball in the back of the net. So, like, from that moment, like, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, Bwonga is going to go off this game. Like, he's having his way mm-hmm. with that Portland back line. So, I mean, I felt like his goal at the end of the game was, I felt like it was a bit inevitable. Like, Bwonga is going to take control of this game and he's going to put one in the back of the net. Very eerily similar. And from, like, the same spot in the field, I think, too, from where he scored against the Red Bulls the week earlier. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to side with Gavin on this one, where it's just he's going to have the occasional match where it's like he's not fully locked in, but I do think it's going to be more often than not that you're going to be like, yep, like take a Bwonga anytime goal scorer because it's probably safe money.
And then with Portland,
I think it's in the negatives right now, by the way.
I don't think
it's a plus.
With Portland, I mean, outside of Mora and Evander, like what else do they have going for them right now?
Portland?
Yeah.
Oh, they're doing good. They got Antony as well.
Yeah.
Not Manchester United, Antony.
Is Jimmy Chara healthy for them?
He's not there anymore.
Where'd he go?
They sold him.
Really?
This offseason, I'm pretty sure.
Diego let his brother go?
Yeah, it was a pretty big deal in Portland world that the Chara brothers split up.
Wow. That didn't make mainstream news over here in New York at all.
Cato Horia, Primera A club, Atletico Junior.
I can't believe they let the other Chara go.
Yep.
All right, so they got Antony, and they got Evander, and they have who's the other guy I said?
Felipe Mora. He was on an insane scoring streak going into this match. I think he'd scored four or five games in a row.
I mean, I can already speak about, I mean, obviously this game, but like I watched them play live when they played New York City at Yankee, and I mean it took a Evander Golazo for them to get past a at that time struggling NYCFC.
I'm not
really too impressed with Portland so far this season, but I mean, I guess other people are higher on them.
I'm higher on them, but they are just so. Like hot and cold, like offensively they're good and defensively they're bad. They're shipping goals, and so like for me they're almost a lock every week to hit like over 2.5 on the goals. And I think recently they've been hitting that pretty consistently.
I mean, and
the last time they didn't hit over 2.5 was week 4.
Any team that is starting former NYCFC fullback Eric Miller as a starting fullback, their defense is not in a good shape.
That poor guy. You guys hated him, and I'm pretty sure Nat didn't he play for Nashville?
He did.
And I'm pretty Nashville hated him too. Like poor guy. Okay, that was a fun one.
Yeah, look, Portland's fun to watch because there's lots of goals.
Oh yeah.
We're going to move on to another thriller, and I put this in the thriller, and I think I got oversold by Joe, but it's the comeback, the two-goal comeback for NYCFC versus Charlotte. Gavin, I know you love to say Yankee Stadium tax. Joe, walk us through this match and why it's actually a thriller, because to your point, I know you posted this earlier today, this is three matches in a row that they have a W next to their name.
Yeah, so the vibes have definitely changed. If you guys don't know, we are currently in the tail end of a 5-game home streak. Now, by home, we put home in quotations because we have multiple stadiums that we play at. So we're kind of doing this hopscotch thing with every other week we're changing stadiums, which is fantastic for the fans because we actually have to like look at this kid like, oh, where are we this week? I don't want to show up the wrong stadium on the wrong day. So our fortunes have changed a little bit. We definitely went through a rough stretch at the start of the season. We had a couple away games against some very formidable opponents in Charlotte and St. Louis. And then coming into this game, we had previously never beaten Charlotte. We had played them down in Charlotte and lost. We had played them at Red Bull Arena and lost. We had played them at Citi Field and drew, I believe. But we had never gotten a positive, what would be deemed a positive 3-point result against Charlotte before. It kind of felt like they had our number. We can never kind of get the win. But also caveat is that previously Charlotte has had pretty decent attackers. And they kind of just seemingly got rid of all of them before the start of the season. They got rid of Swiderski and who's the other? Was there another Polish guy they had? Was it Joswiak? Or who was the other Charlotte guy?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they decided to get rid of all of their offensive talent. I don't understand that. That's a bold, strange move to make.
Coach Joe, they kept Enzo Capetti.
Yeah, but he's shown.
They don't like him.
Did you say offensive talent?
Yeah. So going into this game, we were like, okay, Charlotte got the doors beat off of them, the big bricks beat off of them the previous week against was it Portland? Did Portland beat them 3-0 last week?
Now you've got me wondering.
Oh my gosh! No,
Gavin, you're our stats.
Minnesota.
A Reynoso-less Minnesota beat Charlotte 3-0. So I mean they're coming in licking their wounds. So we're like, okay, this should be an easy result. And then the game starts, and 3 minutes into the match, our designated player center back Thiago Martins decides to backheel a cross that comes in and backheels it directly to the Charlotte left winger who buries it in the back of the net 3 minutes into the game. And there's like an audible gasp from the Yankee Stadium faithful. Like the air, we got sucker punched. We got the air knocked out of us because we expected to come into this game after posting back-to-back clean sheets, 2-0, the last two games. To give up a goal in the third minute was kind of a sucker punch. And then the fear kind of strikes in that because the DNA of NYCFC for the past couple seasons has been that we don't play well from behind. And if we can see the first goal, we are not getting a result. And I think that there was a statistic up until the Toronto game a couple weeks ago, we hadn't won a game where we did not score first in like 2 years, I think. So we got that result against Toronto early in the season. So now it creeps in like, okay, hey, like let's see what these guys are made of. Let's see what their fortitude is to be able to fight back into this game. Because, I mean, all too often I've seen games happen where the team scores in the third minute, bunkers down, and gets out of there with a 1-0 win. And nothing happens the rest of the game except for a goal in the third minute. And you feel like you want your money back because why did I bother coming to this game if I watched a goal in the third minute and then nothing happened for the rest of the game? So NYCFC, although we get scored on, we finish out the half very well. We end up getting a goal from first goal of the season from Keaton Parks off of a set piece from like just inside of the half line into the attacking zone. Service, I believe, was from Julian Fernandez, who's been a bright spot so far this season. He scored a couple injury time bangers the past couple weeks. So our 6'3", number 8, got his head on a ball in the box. So that drew us level at half. And once we drew level, we were a little more we felt it was a little more positive that we were going to get out of there with either a draw or a win. The rest of the game, NYCFC, I felt dominated the run of play. I guess the reason why Russell put this into the thrill, or was this the thrill category? This is the thrill category.
This was a thriller, yeah.
Because Santiago Rodriguez, who's another one of our recently upgraded to DP contract players, has the ball on the touchline and pings in a relatively lofted, innocuous cross, which kind of gets by the Charlotte defense, and a player, Alonso Martinez, who hasn't really gotten a lot of minutes this year, kind of just right place, right time, gets on the end of it and knocks it in the back of the net. The goalkeeper is frozen. He doesn't even make a real attempt to make a save. And this is in 90+4, I think. So the stadium erupts and goes into an absolute frenzy. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch this game, but right after the goal is scored, two people from the stands who are definitely together, they're wearing like the same thing, purple sweatsuit. They decide to rush the pitch and are running in the direction of the corner flag where the players were celebrating. And NYPD, along with Yankee Stadium security, just absolutely lay the wood to one of the kids running on the pitch. Just absolutely smoke them, hit stick them like they're playing Madden. we haven't seen that a lot. There aren't people, a lot of people brave enough to rush the pitch at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field and test NYCFC's fleet of footness and being able to hawk them down like that. But yeah, I mean, after that goal is scored, then our DP center back gets elbowed in the jaw and gets knocked unconscious for a brief spell. So that was super scary. We got to use, because he got hit in the head, we got to use the recently allowed fourth window of substitutions to make a fifth sub.
Concussion sub.
And we brought on Strahinja Tanasijevic, who's our recently signed center back from Serbia, I believe. We got out of there. With a 2-1 win. Finally, break the curse of not being able to get a result versus Charlotte. You guys know from just me being in the chat that I've been cushing out since like last year. it seems as if
you were cushing out from the day he was announced.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It seems as if for right now, his seat is definitely cooled off significantly, with him getting three wins and one draw through four games in this home stretch, with a date with Colorado this weekend. But I wouldn't say he's out of the woods yet, at least in the fans' eyes, because it's all like you guys say Yankee Stadium tax, which is, I mean, it's true. It's hard. It's hard for teams to come into Yankee or City and get a result against New York City. I mean, you can practice all you want on smaller field dimensions, but I mean, we play on it week in, week out. We practice, I'm assuming, on the same dimensions out at the training facility. It's hard to come into Yankee and City and get a result against this team, no matter how bad we're playing at the moment. It's still difficult. But the true gauge is going to be, can Nick get results on the road? And it's difficult in this league to get results on the road as it is, but Nick hasn't shown that he possesses the capability to properly motivate or properly have the tactics to get results on the road. So we will see soon.
You said training facilities, and like I had this intrusive thought of like imagining NYCFC practicing at like local little league baseball fields.
It's actually, the actual hilarious thing is that right next to their training facility in Orangeburg, New York, is a little league baseball field. So,
of course.
So you're saying there's a chance. All right. Well, I'm going to move us on. We've got Austin versus the LA Galaxy coming up next. The upset that almost nobody saw coming. I'm not sure Austin fans even saw it coming. But hey, Gavin, Joe, I'm going to throw your way a thought here. Alexander Ring, masterclass. He was involved in both goals. That's impressive in and of itself. He was 3 for 3 on long passes, which are categorized as 30-plus yard passes. Similarly, 88% overall on passing just in general. That's a solid match from a defensive mid.
I mean, you don't have to sell me on Alex Ring. I watched Alex Ring play for New York City. I love that guy. I love him. Like, he he is the epitome of what you want in an 8'6 player. He's toothy. He'll get stuck in. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. And his offensive prowess. He was so offensively inclined that Ronnie played him as a left winger sometimes, like, which is like you wouldn't think that, but I mean I don't know if that is if that shows you how well Alex Ring can play offense or how tactically inept Ronnie Dyla is, but yeah, Alex Ring he can ball.
Yeah, hey, let me just put it this way: there's a reason I didn't cite his defensive metrics in this match.
I mean, defensive metrics, no. So the assist that he got, one of the assists that he got, the one where he played the long ball into the and the guy scored, that the tackle he made to win that ball and then play it was pristine.
It's a good tackle. Yeah. He had a couple good tackles. He also got dribbled by quite a number
of times.
He's
old. He's like 30. He's over the hump. He's over.
He's 33. Yeah, he's 33 in like what 48 days or something.
Give him a break.
Overall, Austin were really good defensively in this match. It seems like they really focused on defense for LA Galaxy specifically, and it kind of shows in the numbers. Galaxy only posted 0.6 XG from whatever data source FB Ref uses, and that's their worst tally of the season. It's their lowest of the season. On the flip side, 0.6 XG is the best defensive performance for Austin. So this is definitely their best defensive performance of the season. Galaxy's worst offensive, so that has something to do with Austin. I just think they did a really good job of getting compact, sitting deep, not letting Galaxy get in behind them too often. Galaxy really didn't have too many clear-cut chances, and that was all down to Austin.
Yeah. Is Austin figuring it out, or, you know, is Josh Wolf still, like, he's on probation for Fraud Watch? Like, he's not fully off it, but, you know, maybe he gets a little extra slack.
Probation.
They've got 4 wins in 5 games.
Yeah, but what did they have in the, like, 4 or 5 games
prior? Yeah, it's streaky.
3 draws, 2 losses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, yeah, so, Jovlik didn't play, right?
No, he didn't, and Galaxy missed him. Yeah,
that's a huge miss for them. He was scoring goals at a pretty insane clip prior. And I would argue to say that having Jovlik play is going to raise the level of the wingers, Peck and Painstill. So I would say that, mm-hmm. that him not playing was a big miss and part of the reason why their offense struggled.
I agree with that. That was another note I took down. And Miguel Berry up top just ain't it for any team in this league, clearly.
No, but I mean,
definitely not Galaxy.
I would put Painstill, Peck, and Jovlik in the top 5 of MLS front threes that you could possibly have.
Yep. Yep.
I agree with effective. That. Yeah. So, all right. Well, guys, if you don't have anything else, I think we have to address the elephant in the room, which is the next match here. Miami versus New England. We have to say the name that we try and not mention too often. Messi did have 2 goals and an assist in this match. Luis Suarez also had a goal in this match.
I think you should start the other way around. What happened in the first minute of this match?
Fair. Fair.
Craziness from the back line.
What happened in the first minute?
Craziness from the back line. Just a disastrous start. Just a giveaway from the defender. New England Revolution get through. And I don't know. What is Callender doing? He's way off his line for no reason.
Hot take. Callender has at minimum regressed from prior year. And I think maybe even needs to be benched.
Who's their backup?
It's close to that. No one good. Not if Callender's starting in this form.
With all the money they're throwing around in Miami. Every time someone goes down with injury, they're buying another crazy player from South America.
Yeah.
Well, they need Callender to go down with an injury then, is what you're saying.
Is there an Argentine goalkeeper that's available?
I'm sure there is.
Yeah. Emmy Martinez.
Yeah. He's been terrible, though. He has not been good. I mean, this one, obviously, the quarterfinals, just giving the ball away, goes straight in.
Distribution's really bad.
Yeah.
He's had some gaffes, just straight up hasn't saved shots that he would have saved in prior years. I don't want to pile on Callender too much, but he's definitely been lacking. Whereas last year he kept them in matches, this year it's almost like he's doing all he can to get them out of matches.
I want to steal a line from Extra Time. I feel like Callender has regressed to the mean of performances. I feel like maybe he was outperforming his expectations last season, and this season he's kind of regressed to what he actually is and is not performing at some all-world level that he was performing at, earning him U.S. Men's National Team call-ups last year. So,
astute assessment, folks over at Extra Time. I could not have said it any better myself unless I did say it prior to that.
Definitely not Men's National Team.
I
will say, like, Revolution stayed in this as long as they could. It felt, I mean, there was that news pregame.
A whole minute.
No. There was the news pregame that a couple of their players had food poisoning, right? That triggered me to go all in on them this weekend, which paid off. And so then New England Revolution start the game after with the mistake, but eventually Miami picked away, got the first goal. But I think it's the second goal that really sucked the life out of the Revolution. I mean, that pass from Busquets, it took out like five or six defenders straight through the middle, and Messi's right there in front of goal. It's automatic every time, back of the net. I think as a Revs player on that pitch, you're like, what can we do? What can we do? Nothing. Like, we were perfectly set up defensively, and they found the little tiny gap, and we're down 2-1. I think that was just it for them.
Comes down to coaching, if you ask me.
Coaching? I think that just comes down to sheer brilliance from Busquets and a feeling of hopelessness while the team is playing poorly.
But where does that feeling of hopelessness come from? I think, tone to the top on this one, like, that's a coach's job to be like, guys, this is going to be really hard. And if they come back and they peg us back a goal and we go level, don't drop your heads. Like,
yeah, being proactive.
It's still a team with Messi, Busquets, eventually, you know, Luis Suarez. You know, it's, we can say like it's, you know, retirement FC and all that, but I mean, these guys were world beaters for ages. Like, they're still good players.
Yeah, we've got a correspondence corner here from Matt Glenn. He says 65,000 packed Gillette, and for 32 glorious minutes, the Revs were leading the Herons. The Revs played Messi tough, made him work hard to eventually get a brace and an assist. Ravas stopping a point blank shot to deny the hat trick. He did do that, but it led to a goal. The crowd went almost as wild for Suarez, who subbed in, and Messi served up for a goal. My man of the match was Kessler, who didn't give an inch and kept the score as close as it was. Chonkele showed he's the Rev striker. Matt Polster played almost the whole game after being in the ER with norovirus from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. that morning. Oh, hi, kitty. And little to eat. Nacho Hill continues to make his case for leading winger. And Dylan Barrero subbed in for the last 15 minutes, almost a year after tearing an ACL on the Gillette turf. Despite all these positives, the Revs gained 0 from 9 points from the last 3 contests, and fans are frustrated. I'm really interested with all of the positives, considering the Revs are sitting at 4 points on the season.
I don't know what's in the water in New England, but I'll have some of that too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Apparently norovirus is what's in
apparently.
The I'm glad to hear that Barrero is back, because he was playing really well last year until his injury. He was kind of a shining light for New England last year, and that was kind of sucked that he went down and was out for the rest of the year. So I think getting him back is going to definitely provide a little bit of a boost for New England in the coming weeks in games if he stays healthy.
Hopefully he can. Yeah, it'll be big for them.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. New England has enough challenges. They don't need to add injuries.
Does Porter last the rest of the season?
He does, but he shouldn't.
He shouldn't. He should never, like we said before on this podcast, Russell, he never should have been hired. Such absolutely a not. Boring hire. I think the big thing with them is they lost Arena, who was also making the decisions, like in terms of transfers. Similar to losing Bradley, right? LAFC had to go and get a general manager and a coach. New England had to do that in short order, and it's just completely failed so far.
I have an axe to grind with Caleb Porter. Do you guys want to hear a story?
We all have an axe to grind. I want
story
to hear
time.
It.
Let's hear it.
So yeah. I was trying to choose which grad school I was going to go to, and I decided I wanted to get my master's in coaching because coaching is what I wanted my career to be. So there's only a couple schools in the East Coast or in the Eastern Coast that had degrees in coaching. One of them was West Virginia University, and another one was University of Akron. So I emailed both of the coaches because I was like, if I come down for an interview with the program, I want to talk to the coaches about possibly coming on as a graduate assistant, blah, blah, blah. Marlon LeBlanc, who's now the Philadelphia Union 2 coach, was the previous West Virginia coach. He answered my email, set up a time to meet, blah, blah, blah. And then when I went to go visit Akron, I reached out to Caleb Porter, who at that the year that I was going to school there, so this was – I was visiting in 2011. Caleb Porter had just come off of winning a national championship with Akron. I emailed Caleb Porter and received no response. So I visited the school, met with the person, still no response from Porter. I went to West Virginia, met with Marlon LeBrock, and I ended up being a Mountaineer and working with the men's team for 2 years, and I've held a grudge with Caleb Porter ever since.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to respond to your emails, dude.
Mm-hmm. He big time me. He's like, I just won a national championship. I'm not responding to some email.
Yeah. Some rando.
Yeah.
It's rude.
Yo, to be fair, we don't get responses a lot of the time when we reach out to people.
I've stopped trying.
There's a right back who plays for Cincinnati who played for Caleb Porter.
As in played, you know, for Cincinnati currently or played for Cincinnati in the past?
No, plays for Cincinnati now. Played for Caleb Porter at Akron.
Do you know who it is?
I'm assuming.
Trivia?
I would guess it has to be either Yedlin or Powell.
Yedlin. DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah.
Oh,
there you go.
There we go.
We only have two right backs, so I
got to be one of those old guys.
Yeah. All right. I'm taking us to our last in the thrillers category. It's Philly versus RSL. It's another upset that at least I didn't see coming because that spoiled a lot of the bets that I had this weekend. But hey, Gavin, here's a really cool stat. Coach Joe, you're going to appreciate this, knowing where you focus on your coaching endeavors. Zach McMath had 10 passes that were longer than 40 yards, of which he completed 5 of those. Keep this in mind.
Cool.
He had 20 passes that were 30 yards or longer and completed 14 of those.
Wow.
So if you take away those 40-plus yard passes, you can see how many of those 30 to 40-yard passes he made there.
He must have been hitting them out to the wide areas where Philadelphia don't venture a midfielder. Usually, they must have targeted those areas to get out, and clearly they did it pretty successfully.
Zach McMath had an excellent game distribution wise. Like, just
he's a good goalie.
That stood out to me. He also had like 40 something touches. So, I mean, that's that's a different, you know, that's a difference in, I think, style between them and Philly Union, because Andre Blake had less than half that. But I think Andre Blake is not someone who you expect to be taking a lot of touches, because Philly don't necessarily play the same way that RSL do. But yeah, I just thought McMath's distribution and his passes and the accuracy of those, because I think he was like 100% on short range passes, and I think he only missed one medium range pass. So yeah, really good distribution by McMath.
I can't believe McMath's career has gone the way that it has.
Just like a perennial backup until he finally landed a starting spot?
Well, not even that, because he was a starter in Philadelphia early on in his career, and he was he was pretty good prior to them drafting Andre Blake. And then he left Philadelphia, and I think did he bounce around from Colorado to Real Salt Lake, right?
I think he was just backup in RSL.
I can't imagine he was doing much with Colorado, because didn't they have Yarbrough for ages?
No, I feel like Yarbrough just got to the league recently. McMath's been playing in the MLS since like 2000.
Oh, you're right. You're right. 20, okay, so
11, 12?
2011 with Philly, and then he went to Rapids on loan, joined Rapids, was kind of iffy with them, played maybe like between the four seasons he was there, played 28 games. He played just about a season's worth. Not quite.
Oh, well, because went to Vancouver. Tim Howard?
Oh, yeah. That would have been about the time, right?
Mm-hmm. 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. And then Vancouver he had a stint with, and then he went to RSL.
Yeah, so he's kind of like a career MLS journeyman, but he's a good keeper.
Yeah.
And he's really struggled to like land the starting spot. Like he's not like out and out starter ever. Which is weird.
If there were two players from early Philadelphia Union that I thought were destined for greatness, it was Zach McMath and McInerney. Jack Mack.
Mm-hmm.
You guys remember Jack Mack back in the early 2010-11-12 area? Jack Mack was
I've heard about him, I didn't watch
little striker. Like just American kid. He ended up, after he bounced around MLS a little bit, and then he ended up in the Oakland Roots for a while, and then I think he retired. But Jack Mack and Zach McMath, I thought, were destined for greatness in MLS.
Hey, Zach McMath still has a chance.
Yeah, I guess keepers do tend to peak later. So,
shall we talk about the other keeper real quick?
Yeah, we can talk about Andre Blake for like a hot second. What do you want to talk about, Gavin? Is there anything that jumps out to you about Andre Blake?
Letting in a ball that came right at him.
Well, yeah,
that jumps out.
Yes, yeah, the ball apparently jumps out too.
Yeah, but yeah. Unfortunately for him and for Philadelphia, he hasn't been great this season. We've had a couple goalkeepers around the league that have had some rough starts.
Has he been injured?
Yeah.
He's never really been back to seemingly like 100% after the injury. Cause I remember like last season, they for a while didn't even have him taking goal kicks. Like he would set the ball down and they would have another, you know, like a center back take the kick for him. And like ever since that injury, he's just not been all the way back.
Wasn't he injured last season too for a little while?
Yeah, I think that was like it was last season, and then like they eased him in. And yeah,
so I mean, felt like whatever backup goalkeeper they had, he was having like routine howlers, like letting in super soft goals to whatever backup they had.
Yeah, that tracks.
Who was their backup? Like that tells me that's how poorly I remember their backup, because I don't even remember who it was. I'm just like they had a backup. Couldn't tell you anything about him.
They had
it wasn't Zach McMath, I'll tell you that.
He used to be an Orlando City goalkeeper. I think he either won goalkeeper of the year or was in the final three. What's his name? He's like a third string goalkeeper now around the league. Can't remember his name.
Is he the guy who went to LAFC and then he was the keeper there when Union?
You're thinking about John play. McCarthy?
Yeah, I am thinking about McCarthy.
He's been removed from Philly for a while. He's
Yeah. I don't know. I'll look it up. I'll find it.
I remember him having, like, Philly was, like, going crazy because he couldn't save anything.
What is his name? Joe Bendick.
Yep. Yeah, he's another career journeyman MLS.
Oh, doesn't ring any bells at all.
He's now in Vancouver.
I mean, he's sitting behind Taco Aka, who...
Oh, he's not a starter. He's not a starter.
Yeah, no, I mean, Taco Aka is like a, I think, a very solidly average MLS keeper. And I wish he was like slightly above that, because I like Taco Aka. He just like has random moments of brilliance and then like also random moments of not brilliance.
Like in this, like in this game as well.
Yeah.
Like in this I try to hide my disdain for Philadelphia sports, but I mean, I am appreciative of. Did you guys see Gazdag's goal?
No. You know, this is my bone to pick with MLS, and Gavin and I talked about this at 10 p.m. when we were driving home, both of us, and we were on the phone debriefing from the matches. It's so annoying that, like, I can't watch as much of this league live and have to rely on going back and rewatching it when every single match is on Saturday night, all 14 of them. And, like, if you go to a 7:30 Eastern kickoff, you're basically guaranteed to miss all the other 7:30 matches, the 8:30 matches as well, and most of the 9:30 matches. And like in this case, there was only, I think, two matches or maybe even one match that kicked off at 10:30.
Yeah, the Eastern match time was the late one.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's just like, so I got to watch live a grand total of like 2 1/4 matches. I'm so
I knew I was making this appearance. So last night I'm sitting in bed and I put on the MLS wrap-up show so I could at least know what was going on in the league, because I knew we were talking about more than just NYCFC.
Yeah, I try and watch, like, so much, but you know what? This is one I didn't rewatch. I'll just straight up. That's why I talk about Zach McMath, because, like, this is what jumps out to me in
the ball
match.
Came in from the touchline, and he kind of did, like, this little, I guess it was like a back heel type goal in the back of the net. It was pretty cheeky, but they played RSL, right? It was Philly RSL.
Yep.
The RSL goal was I think I'm talking about the right game. This was a goal where he scored it from outside, like just absolute missile to the far post.
The winner. Yep. Yeah,
that was insane.
Insane goals. Insane. Yep. First loss of the season for Philly overall,
which is insane.
In MLS, it is insane.
I can't believe it took them this long.
They've been getting a lot of draws, right?
Well, they have been, yeah.
Yep. But, I mean, RSL, I think we need to give them some props. They're in some serious form right now.
Gavin, like, would you say you want to give RSL the
Cup
flowers?
Cup contender form, okay? Away to Vancouver, 2-1. Home against St. Louis, 3-1. Away to Minnesota, 1-1. 0-0 draw home against Columbus. 0-0. At Chicago, 4-0. At Philadelphia, 2-1. Like, they are just taking care of business.
They are
taking care of business.
Well, are they taking care of business because Chicho Arango is playing out of his skull, though?
It's just the whole squad, really. Like, Chicho Arango is putting the ball in the net. I'm sure it's not just Chicho. But he's contributing. He's a threat up top.
Isn't he leading the golden boot race?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
No, it's Suarez and I think Messi is
and
now.
And who's right behind him? Who's in third? Who's the golden boot leader? Not somebody on Miami.
I don't know the answer. It must be Chicho. Then you are confident.
Chicho Arango is on 8 goals. Right out of his skull, he's dude. 1 goal behind Messi.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm not saying he's doing bad.
No,
but like the squad is doing good.
Gavin, we just said Chicho Arango on 8 goals. He's 1 goal behind Messi. Do you know who leads the league in assists right now?
Is it Chicho?
It's a 3-way tie of Chicho, Laud, and Messi.
Laud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dang.
He didn't even
start the season.
Some might say that Chicho right now is a Messi level talent.
I didn't realize he was popping off that much.
Yeah.
I knew he was playing well, but damn.
Like, he's playing enough. The MLS he's MVP caliber right now. And I don't know if he can maintain that.
Who knows? But we got to enjoy it while it lasts. I don't think he can, personally. And that's just because I have skepticism about RSL's sustainability through a whole season. Because they've never shown sustainability through a whole season, but we'll see.
This year's the year, I'm telling you.
It's Vancouver's year, for the record.
Is that where we're going next?
Well, we're going to go to the chills next, which is our final category. In this case, chills is I'm chilling. I'm not ready to move in one direction or the other on this one. I think there is either an equilibrium that's currently been reached, or there's just not enough information for you to make a decision. So Orlando versus Toronto is where we're going to start, though. Gavin, would you like to talk about Orlando versus Toronto, or would you like to just move on right now?
I would not like to talk about it. I'll be brief. Orlando had a lot of chances in this match. We clearly identified something with Toronto and their back line that they couldn't cope with balls over the top, and we were just cooking them on those. But when it came to that final action in that transition moment, we were just too poor. Bad second or third touch, balls running out of play, poor crosses on the touch line straight to the goalkeeper. Just anything you could think of. Just we were getting balls over the top, we were getting behind them, and we just couldn't put it all together. We eventually do put it all together. We get a goal, and then we get a second goal that Duncan McGuire really should have stayed onside for. He's looking across the line, strays offside, and if that goal counts, if he stays onside, it's game over. We were running away with the game. But that was kind of the sliding doors. It gets called offside. We go into halftime 1-0. Second half, we're doing pretty good. Toronto haven't threatened us really at all. And Duncan McGuire comes off 58th minute for no reason. It's either like 58th or 62nd or whatever. It's early on. He had been our most dangerous player the whole game. And we take him off for Luis Muriel, who we're trying to make work because we know we're losing Duncan. And Muriel's a DP signing, but he just hasn't worked for us yet this season. And we had no threat offensively. Like, as soon as Duncan came out, we had no more of those runs in behind that were threatening Toronto and keeping them back. And I think Herdman realized that pretty quickly, and he just put on attackers. And they were just overwhelming us. And eventually they get the equalizer, 87th minute. But it had been coming. Like, Toronto had been the way better team in the second half ever since Duncan came off. And that's like the point for me. That's the flash point where the game turned. And then Bernadeschi just completely roasted our left back, Kyle Smith. Just took him for a walk, man. He just took him all the way down the field, cut inside, cut back, cut inside. I mean, just destroyed him. Back post, cross, header, goal. And we lose the game. It's our second home game this season already that we've lost the game with a goal coming after the 85th minute. So it sucks. Yeah, it sucks. And for me, the biggest thing was taking off Ojeda, but more importantly, McGuire, and having no offensive threat. And Toronto could just not even think about defense for 20-plus minutes. Really frustrating. Good on Herdman to identify that, though, I will say. Like, props to them.
Gavin, I won't take a victory lap around you on this one.
I appreciate that.
I will respect your time. Coach Joe, do you have anything you want to add in here? Otherwise, I'm going to move us right on and get us out of Gavin's own personal purgatory here.
Joe turned his camera off, so I think he's stepping away for a sec.
That works. All right. Well, hey, Gavin, I'm going to step us away from Orlando, Toronto. We're going to still talk about another Canada team, though. We're going to talk about New York Red Bulls versus Vancouver.
Oh, we lost Joe altogether, by the way.
We lost Joe altogether, and that's all right. But hey, if Joe doesn't come back, just remind you can find Coach Joe on social media at Coach Joe. Gavin, I will volunteer to put his Twitter handle / X handle in the episode description.
Okay.
Excellent work, Gavin. Hey, New York Red Bull versus Toronto. This ends in a draw. I think this is what keeps me in kind of like a, I'm not making any movement or changes on this one. Vancouver gets out ahead early on. I feel very positive because I'm like, Vancouver winning would be great just for my personal like mental state, because I enjoy watching Vancouver and I enjoy even more watching New York Red Bulls lose because they are very good this year and I don't want to be anywhere near them in the standings. Anyways, ends in a draw. Both teams quite good. All in all. I mean, that's like, no notes on this one. Vancouver are a really good team. New York Red Bulls, it pains me to say, are a really good team. Like, there's not a better team in this match.
Sorry, just trying to find the mute button.
Don't worry.
I did find it. I agree. I feel like Vancouver will be disappointed that they didn't win this match.
I'm disappointed for Vancouver that they did not win this match. You are correct.
I think they, you know, we talked about Takaoka and the, I don't want to say howler, but the ball's bouncing on the 6-yard line in your box. Mm-hmm. Go out and get the ball. Like, go out and grab it. Instead, he does a weak dive, a weak punch, and it just falls to the Red Bulls player, and he slots it home. And then Red Bulls go down to 10 men.
Right. And then
just the funniest red card. Yeah. I mean, it's smart. Did you see it?
No. No, I sat there. Yeah.
The ball,
I didn't see it live, and I didn't go back and rewatch it.
The ball bounces over Isle's head. Ile, I don't know how to say his name, the center back who's having a good season for them. And he just reaches his hand up and like punches it.
he did the Chiellini thing.
Yeah. He just like, that's not happening. So handball, red card. The right decision. I mean, it saves the point for Red Bulls in the long run. But man, Vancouver will feel they should have won this game.
I mean, Vancouver will win plenty of games this season. They're a good team. Brian White is just continuing to pop off. He was the one that got the goal for them. Gauld is, like, he's Gauld. He's going to be a threat all season. Really, again, it's just, if they're going to be, like, that top-tier team, like, top one or two in the West, is, to me, on can you get production on the players outside of Gauld and White? I mean, again, I still have questions because, like, Demir Krylock still isn't starting for them. He's still coming on later as a sub. Now, I recognize we've talked about how, you know, he's older, you know, he's further on in his career. They probably didn't bring him in to be that starting guy. But, like, I mean, who are your options then? Because, like, Krylock's not cheap.
Yeah, not much.
He does take up money. Like, he's an expensive bench piece.
But, like I've said before, I think it's good. Personally, I think it's a positive that he's on the bench.
Yeah, look, Krylock on the bench, there are many worse players to have on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's going to be on the bench, you need to have someone better starting ahead of him.
You don't think they have someone better?
Well, he came in for Berhalter.
But injuries.
Right.
So you're saying they should have started him.
I don't know if, like, and again, maybe he can't go like a full 90 minutes. I don't know if any of the players are taking off for Krylock. I'm like, no, like, I can't believe they're taking them off. Like,
That's fair.
Okay. Like, I see Krylock come on, and I'm like, good. Like, get him on.
I wonder if they were just feeling that he wouldn't be able to keep up with the intensity of the game against Red Bulls. They're an intense team to play.
They are, but, like, he's not been starting for them, like, almost the entire season.
Fair. Okay.
So
that's all I've got on that game, and I don't think we had any correspondence corners.
I don't recall any. So we're going to go to Minnesota versus SKC. We had at least one correspondence corner for this, I believe.
Yeah, maybe we may have had two. I'll start with Minnesota.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, we got two. Yep. So this is from Maddie. Minnesota, we just keep dominating and rolling out with confidence from minute one to minute 90. Eric Ramsey is a real coach. Not afraid to make lineup changes, not afraid to use all five subs, not afraid to make halftime subs, not afraid to bench people. He's what a coach should be, and it's working. If we can keep up our productivity in the final third, we should be staying up there in the top four for the West for a while. Real positivity over in Minnesota. Can't blame them. Without Reynoso, who? Like, who cares?
Yeah,
they're doing great.
They haven't cared about Reynoso in a solid year.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you and I were skeptical about this coaching hire. Mm-hmm. Manchester United, you know.
Very young.
Yeah, young. I don't think, like, tons of experience. But at the same time, we were also like, hey, we like seeing young guys being hired, need more young coaches in MLS. I like that a young hire is working out, just for the record. Even if we had our, you know, even if we were poo-pooing it at first and being negative, I like that it's working out, and I'm glad it's working out.
I said 2 years ago on this podcast, MLS needs to dive into the English market, go to those teams, and go look at their coaching staffs. Go look at their coaching staffs and go get their highly rated young coaches. They're out there.
Carlos Cuesta from Arsenal.
I think he's going to Norwich. But yeah, those types of coaches. Like, Liverpool have an assistant coach. He either just moved to another European team or he's going to move. It's like Pep Linders or something like that. What's his
name? That first name puts him in good company.
Pepin Linders, he's still assistant manager of Liverpool, but I think he's going to be moving soon. But he's another, like, highly rated assistant coaching staff type coach who, he's only 41. He's going to have aspirations to be a head coach. And, like, we should be all over that. All over that. And it's...
Or not.
That's a way this league can grow is, okay, we're starting to bring in good talent on the field. We need to start upping our talent off the field. Caleb Porter hires have to stop. Full stop. No more.
Caleb Porter hires can be great if you're bringing them in as assistants to a young head coach.
Yes.
Yes. Guys who know the league, have been around the league for a while, can help them transition, understand the culture and the unique challenges, and you let the tactics and the motivation and the energy and all that come with the young guy. I don't think Caleb Porter's that old either, but, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, Gavin, do you have anything to say on SKC before I realistically, I had a lot of really nice things to say about Minnesota. Maddie hit on all of it. I don't know if Travis
sent us Travis sent us one. He said, another game where the other team tried harder and probably deserved the win. Kareem Shelton made his return to the field and was okay, but never good. That's pretty Kareem Shelton of him. Willy Ogata showed his lack of technical skills in front of goal, and our defense has holes. I feel like the Western Conference has a higher quality than it's often given credit for. And I'm ready for another defiant Vermees speech as we limp our way into the bottom half of the playoffs. On the positive side, Alan Pulido scored his second goal in 2 weeks, and this has historically been when he starts putting up numbers.
Wow.
Alan Pulido, anytime goal scorer next week?
No.
No?
Not a chance. Mm-mm.
Aren't they home?
No.
Oh, they're away against RSL, aren't they? Who are they playing?
Yeah, so? I'm not taking an Alan Pulido anytime goal scorer. You'll catch me on a Chicho Arango or a Lionel Messi anytime goal scorer before an Alan Pulido goal scorer.
Should you do a three-leg Messi, Arango, Bowonga?
Dude, that'd be insane. Unbelievable. That's like the people who bet like $5 on 6 home runs in MLB and be like, I can retire if I hit on this. That should happens. Be a thing, though.
Never happens.
All right. I'm going to move. We have 2 matches left. I'm going to move us on and shepherd us along here. Because we have been recording for 2 hours and 11 minutes now. So that's...
I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready.
We go longer every week, Gavin. I don't know how we do it.
Well, adding a third person doesn't help.
Well, you know. Hey. Yeah. Okay. This one's in the chills, and it's only because of one team. The other one maybe doesn't even belong in this category. It's DC United versus Seattle.
Okay. I've been waiting for this one.
And just like that, we're moving on to the next.
Benteke continues his rampage. Yep. 2 goals, penalty, and a header. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
Red card changes this match for me. I don't know if you saw it, but it's a hard one for me.
Seattle, I am so impressed by their dedication to getting red cards and giving every single possible excuse on why Brian Schmetzer, you know, doesn't have his best team, or his injuries are, you know, out there, or he's not able to field, you know, a consistent player lineup, or, you know, like Steve Cherundolo would have a field day if he had this many potential excuses that he could use anytime he lost a match.
I can see why the ref gave this one. I would have liked to see it be a yellow, though. It's a penalty. You know, usually refs err on the side of caution when it's in the penalty box. Like, unless it's obvious that it's like dog so, or he's not playing the ball at all and he was just taking out the guy. Like, and I guess you could say that the goalkeeper is that late, but it's just, I don't know. I would have liked to see a yellow for it personally, but
here's the thing about this conversation. The easier thing here is to not give the referee the opportunity to make that decision.
Yeah, he really should have just let him run through.
When you put yourself in the referee's hands, sometimes the referee is going to give you a red card.
Yeah, especially for the home team, right? Yeah, so. So that changes the game, obviously. DC United turn it around, get the comeback win. DC weren't great, honestly, with up a man. Like, they were okay, but they weren't, like, dominant. But I guess they didn't really need to be, like... And when I say dominant, I mean, like, creating chances, really pushing Seattle back. It was really just, like, a meh game. Very chill. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah. Seattle's only chances were on set pieces the rest of the game. So it really was just, like, DC keeping the ball, trying to unpick the lock, Seattle just in their defensive shape. It's very similar to Dallas, Houston, that sort of game.
This match didn't move the needle for me. Like, I didn't learn anything.
We do have a comment from Alex, who always drops in. Thanks for coming, Alex, every week. He said, last week was my last straw with the Sounders. Brian said that there will be big changes. So far, it's the same tactics and same lineup formation. I am done with Brian. Sad day.
But I think it's been coming.
Yep. All right, you're our last match.
I feel mildly bad that that Alex was the second to last match for us to talk about for Sounders.
It's okay. We'll do them earlier next time.
We will. Hey, Cincinnati versus Colorado, our final match. I'm not ready to make a decision on Cincinnati. My big question is, are Cincinnati back? I'm not ready to say that they're back yet. Just full stop. I'm not ready to say that they're back. I still have questions like, did the midfield look better? Yes. Is Aaron Bupenza still a bench player? Because apparently he can't be trusted to start a match and his teammates don't seem to want to play with him or play nice in the sandbox. Apparently also, yes. Yuya Kubo and Corey Baird was starting this match. And Corey Baird as a starting player is a decision that I think we have discussed multiple times on this podcast. So Yeah, I mean, my only other thing that I want to throw out here is like my shining beacon of joy. You know how we talked about shot creating actions earlier? Colorado Rapids had 15 as an entire team across the span of that match. Lucho Acosta had 14.
Yeah. Nice.
Now, to be fair, 15 isn't like nothing, right? Like anywhere in like the teens to low 20s is very like normal, I would say, from looking like even just across the whole league this week. Like 15 does not make them the worst. It does not make them the best. It puts them like kind of, you know, meh, middle-ish. That tells, like, Lucho at 14 shot creating actions individually is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yep.
That's, he continues to be just a really exciting, cool player.
There's a reason he was MVP.
If Cincinnati can ever get things figured out, whether it be offensively or in the midfield or ways to, you know, make those shot creating actions more useful, where it puts players in a position to actually take a shot that's more than just like a kick right at the keeper or, you know, through three guys and then still at the keeper, then Cincinnati will be almost certainly a top four team in the East, if not top four in the league. But they're not there yet. So I still questions to answer there. From the Colorado side of things, I mean, they were composed enough. I mean, they got a goal. They were down at one point. 2-0, and you know they still managed to find a way back into it. They make it nervy, but I mean Cincinnati was pretty in control. Like Rapids did a very good job from watching the match of not allowing tons of great opportunities for Cincinnati, but they didn't create much either. Like there might have been two good chances this match. They converted one of them. That's the odds. That's the margins in this sport.
Anything else on that one? I've got nothing.
No. I'm also mentally worn out. I like saving us for last because I feel like I can get away with not saying as much and not being as insightful. This was great.
Big okay. Guy. We do have a correspondent corner from Tyler for St. Louis who had a bye this week. Yes. So he just says this. We won't spend too much time on it. He said, we had a bye week in which Celio Pompeu got a contract extension. Yay. So in lieu of a game to comment on, I'll share a fun fact for no particular reason. He says, did you know Indy 11 has a proud grassroots culture best exemplified and often led by the Brickyard Battalion, who were instrumental in bringing professional soccer to Indianapolis in 2013. The supporter group is extremely well organized and serves as the heartbeat of soccer culture in the community. It will continue to be a vital part of Indianapolis for years to come, and it behooves any soccer project thinking about Indiana to work with them, not in spite of them. Just a random fun fact for your...
Random fun
your,
fact.
Your Monday or your Tuesday when I
post I like this. That fun fact. That's a really fun fact. I enjoy it.
Yeah. So,
hey, Gavin, as always, do you want to throw money into a fire real quick?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm still 0 for 10 or 0 for 9 or whatever.
Well, I'm 1 for 9 or 1 for 10 or whatever it is. So, you know, still with a huge, enormous lead. Gavin, I'll go first. I'm doing something I don't think I've ever done. I've got 3 away legs that I'm picking.
Okay.
I'm taking Cincinnati over Orlando.
Not happening.
Extremely safe because you said it wasn't happening for Toronto over
Orlando. Yeah, I know.
What happened. I'm taking LA Galaxy over the Sounders.
Okay.
Lost to Austin. I think they're going to be looking for revenge. And I'm not convinced that the Sounders are going to do anything to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, this is the one that makes me nervous. I'm taking Minnesota over Atlanta. I have no faith in Atlanta and Minnesota. The vibes are immaculate right now. I think they ride it to one more win.
You had a lock right there for you, bro. I can't believe you didn't pick it for your third one.
No, this is the one. I like to live dangerously, Gavin. That's why it's my social media handle at Mr. Danger Russ.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right, I did. Let me find it here. I'm done doing money lines for right now.
Well, Gavin, even if you're done doing money lines, you're still not winning.
I am. Oops, sorry. I'm doing over 2.5 goals, San Jose versus LAFC. Over 1.5 goals, DC United versus Philadelphia. Over 1.5 goals, Orlando, Cincinnati.
So boring. This should only count as like half of a wager.
No. So boring. No.
So. Oh, yucky. Gross. I don't like it. You're no fun.
Well, my AirPods just died. That's how long we've been going, so I think we should call it a night.
I guess we can call it a night, Gavin. Well, all right. In that case, Gavin, I'm going to mute you so that I can outro us as normal. But hey, to everyone who stuck through this episode, this long, amazing marathon of an episode, we weren't kidding with Coach Joe when we told him 3.5 days. It's Thursday as we're sitting here finishing up this recording. So anyways, thank you very much, as always, to Coach Joe for coming on. You can find him on social media at Coach Joe. You can find Gavin on social media at LionsBlog1. And you can always find the podcast on social media at MLS Now Podcast. You can also find it on the website at MLSNowPodcast.com. And you can find me on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. Folks, thank you very much, as always, for sticking with us. We appreciate all your love, all your support. We hope that you enjoyed the new format. If you did enjoy it, let us know. If you hated it and you want to see it go away, let us know that as well. We won't be offended. But in the meantime, enjoy some more MLS. This league is ridiculous. I hate it here. I love it here. Gavin, listeners, till next time.
Till next time.